cliffcentral.com.
Yay! Yay, 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 yay. Something to get you going this morning. I reminded Justice that it's Puzza Thursday this morning and he's very excited. Suddenly he had a spring in his step. All right, it is time for that part of the week where we all get to inform ourselves. It's almost like the week in review, and we get to look at all the major stories that are going on in politics and beyond politics. It's the Burning Platform, which is powered by Nando's. And this morning, as always, Justice Malala, South Africa's foremost and most distinguished analyst.
Sure.
Come on. The host of The Justice Factor on television, the author of We Have Now Begun Our Descent.
Yeah.
Here he is, Mr. Malala.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All of this is true.
This is true.
All of it is true. Mm-hmm. So I always get this update from Justice the night before, and he says, okay, these are the things on the agenda. Because if we don't have an agenda, there's so much to talk about that you'll end up filling up the hour and you won't even know where you started.
We could just go, hey? I mean, it's just so much.
Well,
there's just so much.
Speaking of going, I mean, the big news, if you believe the Rand, and usually the people who make these decisions about buying and selling currency, they have inside sources.
Yeah.
Because there's money to be made. And whenever there's money to be made, there tends to be a huge amount of information sold at a premium. Now, people are saying that this weekend there's a big meeting taking place in the ANC. And that this meeting could result, and you know, a lot of people are getting very excited about this, but it could also just be a lot of propaganda and lies. There could be a decision made this weekend about the president's future. What do you think?
Yeah, so it's the National Executive Committee of the ANC meets. Guys, can I just ask? I mean, I see we're all here. So no one gets fired at this place. No one gets retrenched. No one gets...
No, we've got rid of some people over time, but it's very rare.
Unpaid leave?
We're not doing Brian Molefe's here, though. But yeah, I mean, that's...
That's just incredible.
Listen, we have a major problem in this country. You've brought it up so many times. And since you've come in with this diversion tactic of yours...
No, I'm coming back to the other thing.
It just seems like we put a lot of people... You mentioned again last week that Ria Piecha is still under our pay.
Oh, yes.
Ria Piecha has been the police commissioner, and she hasn't been serving. She's been staying at home. We've been paying her a huge salary to sit at home. Because they don't know what to do with her. Yeah.
Maybe she should go become an MP, in you know, while she's resting.
Yeah,
isn't then, that what well, Brian did? Because he was on I unpaid
heard,
leave. Now.
I heard Claudie Motsoeneng is still being paid by the SABC as well.
Oh my word!
I mean, the day Mabali and I left there, they stopped paying us. They stopped calling us. We stopped having any engagement with them at all. But Claudie was by various processes removed. It wasn't just one. You know, thank you very much for coming, Mr. Motsoeneng. Mm. He's still being paid.
Someone showed me the figures. In 2011, he was on 1.6 million rand, I think. I think it was Phumzile van Dam who tweeted those numbers. In just 5 years, he'd gone to 4.6, I think it is. It's amazing. It's fantastic.
So, I mean, with that kind of salary, are you honestly going to, you know, put your hands up and say, no, guys, don't pay me. No. You know I'm not working. Don't pay me.
We do have a lot of
for the people.
We do have a lot of extra baggage and extra weight on our flight,
yeah.
and we're paying for a lot of people's seats that we shouldn't have to pay for anymore because they're doing nothing for the country.
And these are the people we know about. There are so many state-owned enterprises. Don't forget that we talk about Eskom and SAA. There just over 300 state-owned enterprises in South Africa. So we don't talk about your Denel, your Brasa. There are so many, of them. We probably are still paying Lucky Montana something. You know, there's all sorts going on. So it's a big, big, big issue. Anyway, so... Ba-ba-ba-bum.
Yeah, let's get back
this
to the president. The NEC this weekend.
This weekend. Now... The NEC starts its meeting on Friday, but goes on until Sunday. You'll remember in November last year that there was a meeting of the NEC, and Derek Anekom was brave enough, out of all those 86 members of the NEC, plus the 18 from the provinces, he was the guy who said, oops, can we just divert from the agenda a bit. Let's talk about the president and whether he's fit for office. Now, this was an extraordinary move by a member of Jacob Zuma's cabinet to actually say, well, I serve in his cabinet, but I don't think the guy is doing a good job at all. So what happened in that instance was that they said, okay, let's have a debate. So you started seeing the divide inside that NEC. You started seeing people like Aaron Motsoaledi, other people saying, yes, well, the president hasn't covered himself in glory, and so forth and so forth and so forth. What happened that day was amazing and extraordinary. Mzwandile Masina, the mayor of Ekurhuleni, was getting married in Cape Town at some fancy wine estate. Many members, many of the younger members of the NEC, so Nomvula Mokonyane, Malusi Gigaba, Fikile Mbalula, a few others, were at that wedding, you know, singing away nicely, twang, twang, twang.
Right.
All that stuff. It was all go down in the Cape at this wine estate. Then they get a call that things are happening at the NEC. And it looks like the numbers look like Ubaba might be in trouble. Because if there's 86 members of the NEC and you start counting them one by one, some haven't pitched up, some are at the wedding, some are at this place and so forth. Suddenly, if a vote happens without the others, it looked like it could be, ooh, Baba must sit down now. So a debate happens in this NEC and it's, oh, no, don't do it. No, we mustn't. Why do you say the president has failed and so forth and so forth? It's Saturday. And so what happens then is, boom, the meeting is adjourned, phone calls are made, and suddenly in Cape Town there's a flurry of activity as people... Now, Mabali, you might want to think about this when you get married, okay? there we are, getting married. And suddenly, Gareth gets a call, and Ben gets a call, and Justice gets a call. There's a private jet waiting, guys. Gotta get out. And so, there you are, and just about to say, I do, when everyone... out the room to go.
Take that very personally.
First of all, let's just say that now we know what our public servants are doing when they're meant to be working for us. They're all attending swanky weddings in the winelands of the Cape. That's the first thing. Second of all, there's a private jet waiting to take them away because Ubaba's personal safety is under threat within the ANC. I mean, this is outrageous stuff. Entirely apart from the fact that this vote might happen.
Anyway, so...
Okay.
So there's Mabali left at the... Just about to say I do, and all her friends... rushing off to the NEC meeting in Irini, at the Irini Country Lodge. Mm-hmm. So, boom, they arrive there. The debate happens, and it becomes clear in that meeting that President Jacob Zuma has more support than those who say he should go. And so you have this, it ends in, okay, he's not going, he's staying, and so forth and so forth. What happens between November and May 2017? In that time, President Zuma pulls the trigger. Boom, Pravin Gordhan goes, Mcebisi Jonas goes, a new set of people come in, and there's pushback from within the ANC. This week we saw COSATU take the most extraordinary decision that Jacob Zuma cannot stand in front of its members and give a speech.
That's never happened before.
That is the president of the leader of the Tripartite Alliance, the ANC, SACP, COSATU, is told by his alliance partner that, wena baba, you can't. Everyone else can come and speak. You can't. This week we saw the most extraordinary thing in the Public Enterprises Committee, where Pravin Gordhan, where other people, what's her name? I think it's her name is Ranto, the leader of the study group on public enterprises. All of them going for Lynn Brown and going for Ben Nguani, who are known allies of the president, absolutely decimating them in there. And suddenly you're seeing that divide from November has opened up quite significantly, but that people are emboldened to say, I'm sorry, Jacob Zuma, this is not working out. You saw last Thursday, I think it was, when the South African Council of Churches unveiled its unburdening report. Now, that report is what Guedemantashe, what Jacob Zuma should have called for and said, ANC members, ANC sympathizers, voters, come, if you have been in any way offered a bribe, manipulated and so forth, come and talk to us. The churches had to come in and do that. And if you look at what's happening, the pressure on Jacob Zuma is becoming more and more and more profound.
Justice, it wasn't so long ago that you said you'd run the numbers, mm-hmm. and you said that you saw no way. You in fact made a bet with me that by December of this year we'd be having a conversation about how the president was still there. Do you remember?
I remember that.
Are you changing your position? I mean, you can't change your bet. You're going to give me money, but are you changing your position?
I know you want your money right now. I'm telling what money. I'm saying is, and I have to say, I did say that. But the pressure on Jacob Zuma is increasing by leaps and bounds every day.
His position is becoming untenable, and his allies are starting to question whether or not they should stay in alliance with him.
Indeed. And what this meeting will have to consider is the fact that the Constitutional Court is due to return with a decision on the secret ballot matter. That matter, it won't be that the Constitutional Court says, yes, have a secret ballot. It will say to the Speaker of Parliament, Baleka Mbete, that you need to, the Constitution allows you to consider and even have a secret ballot. So you need to apply your mind and show that you've applied your mind when you say Makosi Khoza will be able to vote without fear, that Pravin Gordhan will be able to vote without fear, that he'll be victimized by Didi Mabuza. So the possibility also arises that Jacob Zuma could face a motion of no confidence in Parliament. And the ANC may have to consider that it will have to see its leader kicked out by the opposition with 151 members of the 400 and 50 members of the ANC, if it's a secret ballot, voting with the opposition and Jacob Zuma being kicked out. So the ANC now has to consider the fact that within its own movement, people hate Jacob Zuma. Uh-huh. Outside of its own movement, people hate Jacob Zuma. If there's a secret ballot in Parliament, its own people who hate Jacob Zuma in a secret ballot would definitely, 50 plus one, would vote with the opposition. And then you'll have Julius Malema running around singing Solomon, saying, but, we got rid of Jacob Zuma.
But there's also, I mean, even if there isn't a secret ballot, we know that there are some members of the ANC who could care less. They're going to vote anyway against him.
Yes, but not the key thing is, remember, you are a member of parliament, you earn whatever, 80,000 rand a month, mm. you've got all sorts of things that go with that. Mm-hmm. The other big issue is that when Jackson Mthembu, when Guedemantashe, who are on the other side of the Jacob Zuma crowd,
right.
say to you, we will solve this problem ourselves, not with this opposition, not with people telling us what's going on, da-da-da-da-da-da. We will do it ourselves. Then you have a problem of party versus country.
Hence this NEC meeting being important.
Hence this NEC meeting
okay, being important. Okay, so actually this is an important meeting, and there could be something quite groundbreaking.
I think there could be. I think this meeting could be quite significant. It could be significant in that it could say, for tactical reasons, we're going to ask Jacob Zuma to step down so that the opposition doesn't get the satisfaction of doing it. And that could be the push by many inside the ANC.
And then the longer term effect of the president being removed is that this impacts very badly on Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma's campaign.
But The ANC can't fire Jacob Zuma as its president at this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It can only fire him at its as its president in December.
So he still hangs around.
So if he leaves as the president of South Africa and someone else goes in there, what is he going to do all day?
Campaign really hard for his successor.
Exactly. Who is the successor
that he has? Entire career at the moment, isn't all his time.
All his time. In the morning, Monday morning, he'll go to the NWC meeting. After that, remember, he'll have all the benefits of a president post his presidency. And therefore, he will be able to go out there, campaign and campaign and campaign and machinate behind the scenes while a new president, maybe Cyril Ramaphosa or someone else, a caretaker, is in place. So Jacob Zuma still has a lot of power to do a lot of things in the run-up to the December conference. So you might get rid of him now, but he might still be so powerful
that he extends
himself.
But Justice, where are all those people who are supposedly working behind the scenes to have certain charges reinstated because they're building a case against the president? When are those people coming back to center stage? They've been in the wings for a while now. When are they coming back onto stage?
Mabale, your optimism is amazing, and I want to thank you because my spirit is lifted right now.
No sarcasm at all here.
But there are people who still believe that, you know, there are people working behind the scenes. There are several things. So who can investigate President Jacob Zuma? The Hawks?
Mm-hmm.
Who's running the Hawks?
Jacob Zuma.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who can investigate President Zuma? The Hawks, the SAPS. Those are the institutions of state that have to find the evidence that money moved from here to there and so forth and so forth. In 2008, after the Polokwane conference of the ANC in 2007, you'll remember that the first thing that the ANC did after Polokwane straight to parliament in March was for Yunus Karim and Maggie Sochu, who's now, I think, the deputy minister of police. That was their job. They destroyed the Scorpions within 7 months. It was gone, done and dusted, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And it no longer existed. And the Hawks came afterwards, and the Hawks haven't done anything of significance really since then. Then who has to take the charges if President Zuma gets investigated and actually prosecute them? Oh, it's Shaun the Sheep.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's no investigation away in the first place. Then there's no prosecution. There is a case that's cut and dried that's waiting to be prosecuted, and it's the one involving 783 charges of Shabir Sheikh giving Jacob Zuma bribes. And that is cut and dried because already Shabir has served time for bribing Jacob Zuma. That one is like, it's clear, it's clean, it's there. The files are there, everything is there. But Sean has been sitting on it. He's been thinking.
thinking
for a long time. So, at the moment, I don't see much of that happening. There are all sorts of other allegations against President Jacob Zuma, his association with the Guptas. But we've seen that this new public protector is not keen to do anything about it. Why is it that things at Eskom have gotten worse? And if she was serious at all, she would have said, I'm going to take my predecessor's report and add on to what's happening now and find out exactly what's going on. And actually, you'd have the basis for a criminal case at Eskom. But no.
Not interested.
Since you've heard about Brian Molefe coming back and all that stuff that's happening with Ben Ngubane, the chairman of Eskom, have you heard anything from the public protector? I haven't.
Not a peep. In fact, I don't even know what she's doing. And remember, with Thuli Madonsela, we knew exactly what she was doing.
Exactly, exactly. So we have a problem here. We have a problem. We have hope, but not much else.
Now, there are a lot of people, because I don't want to leave this alone yet. There are a lot of people who are on the payroll of either the president and his patronage or the Guptas and their patronage. Are these people not becoming a little bit nervous because they can see things are closing in around them? Are they not concerned that they'll find themselves stranded?
When a ship is sinking, you will begin to see
the rats,
yeah. You know, going to higher ground on the ship, or higher point. At some point, one of those is going to jump, one of those rats, and the pressure now is building up. We haven't had a significant jumper yet, but a lot of people are sweating. A lot of people are thinking, maybe this isn't so good. What's going on? The key to remember is that actually all the people that we point at and say, oh, those are the good guys in the ANC, they are a part of that rat pack, if you will. Where was Cyril Ramaphosa in 2012? He was standing right next to Jacob Zuma as his deputy. Where was Pravin Gordhan? He was being reappointed as local government minister. So what you're seeing is actually the ANC, maybe it wasn't a split, but the ANC actually splintered significantly in 2008 when Musiwale Kotambazi Mashola started COAP. This is now the fracture of the Zuma camp. The Zuma camp, in the Zuma camp, people are saying, I didn't realize he was that bad. Oh, I thought we could make it work. So it's actually a split of the second faction, which was the bigger faction. So when that happens, so you've now got that faction delineated into two, or in fact into several, and there'll be more people jumping. In time, it's coming. A lot of people will start saying, this lame duck is out in December. What if his Nkosazana doesn't win? And so, do I want to be here?
There might be a gap for someone like Zweli Mkhize.
There is a gap for Zweli Mkhize, and he is, it's interesting that Zweli Mkhize is now speaking, guys. I mean, why haven't we had Zweli Mkhize on this station?
We had just a month or two ago.
There you go.
In fact, it was 2 days before the finance minister was fired.
Fantastic. I'd so like to get the podcast that. I'm gonna get to
we
that
we
podcast.
Spoke we talked a lot of Zulu history. We spoke a lot about the Mkhize clan and where they come from and all the stuff, but we did speak about politics, and we did talk at that stage. He was less talkative than he is now about the state of the ANC, but he was certainly very forthright about his own position.
Have you noticed that he's issuing statements in his name now?
Yes.
Yesterday he was saying that what's happening at Eskom is terrible, it's of concern, and it's bad for the ANC and so forth. This guy is speaking, and he's speaking sense. And so I think that is a campaign that's definitely on the go.
Let's talk about someone else whose campaign may have been scuppered. We don't know whether this is dirty tricks, because this happens in politics all the time, or whether this man is in fact as bad as the rest of the apples. But Jeff Radebe, obviously in some very ugly personal and not particularly it doesn't have a public effect as much as some of the scandals that we read about politicians every other day. But there's this ugly story about him and the messages to the girl who was taking the pictures at the presidency. Is this, I mean, the cynical part of me sees it as a campaign to discredit Jeff Radebe and to ruin his chances as a man who's had a pretty good track record. He was a minister during the Mandela years. He stayed there throughout.
And
he's married to Bridget Radebe, who's she's one of the Motsepe clan, and this is someone who we've always thought of as being the respectable old uncle, government. What's happened here, Justice? I mean, put on the speculation.
The story itself is sordid enough, and people have seen it. But for me, there is something. I'm not one to sing and clap when a politician does something. I'm a bit, let's just say I'm not as hopeful about politicians as Mabale seems to be. Mm. But there is something that happened here. So all of us know the story. He sends SMSs to this.
He wants nudes. I mean, you know, a lot of men do.
Speak for yourself, Gareth. Hey, but anyway.
So yeah?
Is that a nervous laugh? I see.
Not that, nervous at all.
Oh, okay.
What guy doesn't want nudes? Go ahead.
That's what I was saying. Speak for yourself, Gareth. Anyway, so, you know, he asks for nudes, he doesn't get, and so forth and so forth. The story, you know, it's a long story, and it goes to what's happening inside GCIS and so forth. But it hits the newspaper. Sunday Times this past weekend runs the story. Now, there are several things to this. On the Sunday itself, Jeff Radebe and his wife, Bridget, they go and see Mama Winnie Mandela. He comes out of there, he sits down. I think Jafet Ncube is now the editor of The Star, sits down with him and says, I am so sorry. What I've done has embarrassed this young woman herself, firstly. Hmm. It has embarrassed my wife, my children, my comrades in the ANC and the government that I serve.
We've never heard this kind of apology from people.
You have never seen this kind of apology, one, so fast, okay? I mean, the day of the thing, he comes out and says this. But there are several aspects to it that for me, that I wish we had more of this. One, he didn't himself, there are people around him who've intimated that this is part of a Dirty Tricks campaign. He didn't say that. Mm. He said, my actions have embarrassed my family, my wife, my da-da-da. Key to that, in this climate where women are being abused, where we're hearing stories, whether it's Karabo Mokoena to this and so forth, where if today two people who are having an affair are caught, it's always the woman who is, oh, she is this, she's a slut, she's whatever. In this world, he comes out and says, I apologize to Ms. I think her surname is Bambani. I apologize to her. I apologize for the public humiliation, the attention on her. The
takes personal responsibility. This is something we have not seen in a public official for. I can't remember the last time.
I don't think we've seen it. We haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. So he does this. So the apology is swift. It's unambiguous. It stands and empathizes with, because right now I can tell you, people are saying, yeah, that young woman, you know, that she was suspended or fired or whatever because, oh, she was allegedly showing her bum to Jacob Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa when she was taking pictures of them. She was a photographer at GCIS. And, you know, so it's always the woman's fault. Why was she wearing a miniskirt? Why was she wearing high heels?
To make it about her.
It's about her. The men are, they're innocent victims' shame. Well, I mean, no one forced the guy to get on his mobile phone. Anyway, so the apology was quick. The apology was fulsome in its acceptance of responsibility. And it showed a sensitivity to this country. I thought, say what you will about Jeff Radebe. Personally, I think Jeff Radebe's chances of becoming president of South Africa are zero. And I think there were zero before. But, man,
I think this has maybe worked in his favor.
It's worked so beautifully in his favor. I think the guy did good. And, man, I wish more people did things the way he did this. Maybe he's got a good spin doctor, so shout out to the spin doctors if he's got them. But he did good. He apologized to the young woman, to his wife, to his family, to his comrades.
It's refreshing to
see. It's refreshing. Some among us, okay, are still saying, it was a honey trap when you sleep with a child who has been, whose father said, please look after my kids when I'm gone. I mean, really. Jeepers. Still haven't apologized, by the way, for that.
No.
I noticed.
No apology.
So I thought, you know what, Jeff Radebe, we might have lots of differences and so forth, but I thought he did good. I thought that apology was the way politicians should behave in South Africa, and we don't see enough of that.
And the way politicians should not behave is Eskom. Yesterday you mentioned already that Lynn Brown came under some probably deserved fire.
Yeah.
But tell us what's going on there. And why is Ben Gubane, he's the common thread between so many of these state-owned enterprises that seem to be dysfunctional. Ben Gubane was at the SABC. Mm. Ben Gubane has been involved in Transnet in some ways. He's been involved in Eskom.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Who is this guy and how come he has so much power and why is he so trusted to hold positions of chairs?
Ben Gubane's political history goes back to the IFP in the 1980s. While people were fighting against apartheid, he was at the IFP holding the line. In the new dispensation, he became, he's a medical doctor, educated. You will remember he became an ambassador to Japan.
Mm.
And there were a few scandals while he was there. He came back home and he was swiftly deployed in the President Jacob Zuma administration to the SABC and to Eskom. The thing is, how do people actually do this without any sense of shame? When you issue a statement saying, I've resigned for the sake of Eskom,
you cry.
You cry.
You're on national TV. It's not like you only have three witnesses.
Exactly. You say this. Statements are issued. The Minister of Public Enterprises, Lynn Brown, Lynn Brown comes out and says, I've accepted the resignation. I'm appointing Matsila Koko as the acting until we found someone.
Mm-hmm.
The job is advertised. Okay, the job is advertised. You, as the person who resigned, go off to Parliament in your new job. You are sworn in front of the Speaker of Parliament.
Mm-hmm. You probably got more eyes on you than any other MP because they know that the plan is that they're going to parachute you in as finance minister. So we're all watching.
We're all watching.
We see him. They zoom in on him sitting in that bench looking very smug and happy that he's got another job. Didn't have to worry about his rent payments for that month.
So then... It doesn't work out. So the hustle was that Brian was going to become the finance minister. It was all set up. And the people said, no way, it's not going to work. This is wrong. The ANC frustrated that move. And suddenly it's, what am I doing in Cape Town sitting here? I thought I was going to be the big cheese. And now I'm not. And so they decide essentially to commit fraud and take him back to Eskom. There is absolutely, absolutely no way that Brian Molefe was on unpaid leave or on sabbatical or whatever. He'd left. They want to get him back in there because the project that was started with the sale of Optimum Coal to the Guptas and so forth is not complete. But what is going to... There's always a crime, and Gareth, you like history, you'll remember with Nixon. It wasn't what he did. It was covering up what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So the big cover-up is that Ben Gubane and Lynn Brown and Brian Molefe make sworn affidavits to the courts saying, no, the man was on unpaid leave when he left. That means that you're saying in front of when you go to the police station and there's the commissioner of oaths.
Mm-hmm.
It's
perjury.
It's perjury. It's perjury. And the ANC has said this. The Parliamentary Committee on Public Enterprises has said this. And so you have these people going to the extent of lying in a sworn affidavit and saying, no, this, that.
But they put themselves front and center in line for nasty criminal charges that could land them in jail. They must have such a fear of doing the alternative and being honest. What do they have? What does the president have? Or what do all these other external agents have over them that makes them so fearful that they would put themselves in danger of going to jail?
Thank you. So the connect the dots time is now. Mm-hmm. So why did they do all the things that they did? They did them all so that the Guptas could be enriched and President Zuma's son, Dudu Zani, could be enriched through state-owned enterprises. Why is it, what has happened to make them be so brazen?
Mm.
Have they taken monies in the past? Why are they so beholden to all these people that now they can't get out of this spin that they're in? And there lies the rub. Why are all these people so obsessed with doing the bidding of the president and his business partners? Something, someone has something on them. And it could only be that, how? You've taken the first 30 million. So why, you now want us to tell people that you've taken that, you're going to go to jail.
So in other words, we've got to keep digging.
You got to keep digging because you can't get out.
And Ben Ngubane and Brian Molefe and Lynn Brown are the people we're going to dig with.
The EFF, you got to love Julius Malema. He loves this the judiciary and he loves the using our laws now.
Yeah.
I think a date has been set. I think it's June 8th. Mabale, I'm not sure. I think it's June 8th or June 6th. When the EFF is taking Eskom and taking Ben Ngubane and Brian Molefe in particular to court on this appointment matter. Julius Malema will be outside court. There'll be 10,000 EFF members turning out in their red berets and outfits.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, he's not going to lose that case. He's not going to lose. Just from what is in the public space, it's going to be lit, as they say, on the street. And Julius is going to win. So yes. Already, you know, the Jacob Zuma administration doesn't stop giving to the opposition. Mm. Julius Malema will be a hero once again. And, you know, some other opposition party will have some application. I mean, who knew who's the DA, public enterprises spokesperson? I can't remember her name. But now she's standing outside Eskom, jumping up and down about it. Mazzone, I think, has said it.
And she was busy giving lip to Lynn Brown yesterday.
Exactly. And you know what? There. You know, creating stars, Jacob Zuma. It's like, I think he's joined Idols now. No, sir.
Fine. That would be better. The final thing here is about someone who we're going to have on the show shortly. She's coming in to see us, Dr. Makozikoza. She first came to our knowledge. Most of us don't really care who's in parliament. Most of us don't know because we don't actually appoint them. They come off the party list. But this woman has somehow endeared herself to us almost in a way that was last felt by the public protector of the previous regime, Thuli Madonsela, because she stood up at the SABC parliamentary hearings, which she held, the subcommittee and all of those hearings, and she made herself known to us. She was one of the few people who people would go, oh, that's a principled, ethical person. She's also written a scathing report on what she believes is rotting and decaying and corrupting the inside of the ANC, which she loves. And now Makozikoza is being regaled as a hero by some, but she's under threat of death by others.
The ANC Youth League in KwaZulu-Natal has been very has essentially gone around saying why is she saying all these things, why is she an enemy of the movement. Its leaders in KwaZulu-Natal have essentially set up a campaign to intimidate her. One of its leaders has put on their Facebook page, circulated her home address in Pedro Maritzburg, saying this is where she lives. Let's see what happens. Now, KwaZulu-Natal and the ANC and the IFP are dripping in blood. In the 1980s, thousands of people were killed. If you speak to someone like who's that expert, Mary De Haas, she'll tell you about what happened in the 80s and 90s in KwaZulu-Natal. We still have huge question marks over the 1994 election there because so many people died. An average of 1,000 people were being killed every year in KwaZulu-Natal between 1989 and 1994. Things were bad. People were dying. Makosi Khoza herself, growing up in Pietermaritzburg, I think her house was bombed by enemies when she was with the UDF fighting against apartheid in the late 80s. So now you have the specter of violence in KwaZulu-Natal. You have someone like her. Imagine being from KwaZulu-Natal. Your kids are living there while you are an MP in Cape Town. And suddenly there is outright threat against her. This is a matter of massive, huge public, should be a matter of huge public outrage that someone who speaks, who is a member of parliament, is now living in fear for her life and for her kids'
Shouldn't
lives.
It first and foremost be a matter of outrage within the ANC? I mean, if you've been appointed by your organization to go to parliament, surely this is a moment where you see the leadership vacuum, because any good person, even if you have just a one thread of good in you, you stand up against violence to your own family. You stand up and you say, listen to the ANC Youth League in KZN. This is not acceptable. We've seen it done before. That's how Julius ended up forming his own party on the outside.
Exactly.
Someone stood up and said, you don't do this. Of course, it was for various other reasons, but no, not a word. Not from the president, from the deputy president, not from any of the top six.
Nothing.
The premier of KZN, Oros, nothing.
Nothing. Where is Oros now saying to the ANC Youth League in KwaZulu-Natal? Where can we have some Oros? But why isn't he standing up and saying, not in our name, not in the ANC Youth League's name? The ANC Youth League, started by people like Nelson Mandela in 1948. How can this happen in the ANC? But it's being allowed to happen. Baleka Mbete has said that, I'll sit down and we'll see what we can do about it. Why is this not happening like this? But, by the way, Thabile Dlamini's kids got protection. Straight from the social development ministry without any, let's stop and think about it and so forth and so forth. So, you know, there's something going on here. But if anything happens to Makosi Khoza, if anything happens to her kids, to her family in Pietermaritzburg where they live, then the blood of those people will be on the ANC's hands, and the ANC needs to act to protect one of its own. It cannot allow this to happen. It means that we're still living in a country where there is no freedom of speech, there's no political dissent, where you can't speak up against the ANC. In fact, it says the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal has morphed into the what it was or what the IFP was in the 1980s, where, you're an enemy and you get killed.
Well, what a frightening specter that is. And in the province, the most contested province of all within the ANC.
Exactly.
That shows you how the heart of this organization is exactly what Makosi Khoza said it is, rotten.
I mean, the key here is that if Makosi Khoza is feeling like this, what about Senzo Mkhunu, who was ousted as ANC chair? You'll remember how he was ousted. There were four ANC conferences in KwaZulu-Natal. All of them were nullified. All of them were broke down simply because the ANC was so divided and they couldn't come to an agreement again and again and again. For the fifth one, Sihle Zikalala won, and so there's half of the ANC which is essentially out. What happens when Makosi Khoza, who wasn't even directly involved in that dispute but came from a different angle altogether, what happens to her if she goes or something happens to her? Those ANC members are sitting there saying our own organization is capable of this and it will do 1, 2, 3. Mm. How do you circulate someone's home address on Facebook? What do you want people to do with that? I mean, this is where, you know,
you wouldn't need much more evidence to prove that there was intimidation.
No, it's absolute intimidation. But if you take that and say, well, what happens with a secret ballot, an open ballot on President Jacob Zuma, a no confidence motion in Jacob Zuma? For me, this is clear evidence that she cannot vote with her conscience. Because if she votes against Jacob Zuma, if it's an open ballot,
there is an imminent threat upon her life.
Then she has already been threatened. Do you think she'll go back to KwaZulu-Natal and feel safe? No. What if she gets petrol bombed? This, for me, the evidence is so huge that actually ANC MPs cannot vote without thinking about their personal safety. Go back to what D.D. Mabuza in Mpumalanga said. If they vote against us, we will recall them. We'll take them out, he said. That is clear threat.
Justice, there was a story in the news yesterday about a veteran, Thabang Makwetla, who was apparently hijacked and then dumped in Brits over the weekend. So these threats are not harmless.
No, they're not baseless. Exactly. Yeah. What was going on? I mean, this is a deputy minister in this administration. Thabang Makwetla is one of those people who's been speaking quite forcefully about whether President Jacob Zuma is fit for office. He's in the NEC of the ANC. Interestingly, he's from Mpumalanga, where Makhosi Khoza was threatened in January last year when she went with the portfolio committee. And afterwards, after pointing out that people were not doing their jobs, they started getting death threats. So there is a seam of very unpleasant stuff going on. I'm not sure whether Thabang Makwetla's hijacking is political, but you're seeing worrying signs of the violence that's just under the surface and whether it's going to bubble through. The Thabang Makwetla hijacking is very odd. Where was his security detail? He'd gone to see someone, a veteran, Mungane Walisirote, the author, and he's been pivotal in that campaign by ANC veterans that says, what's happened to our movement? What's going on here? So he's on the other side of power. And this is a guy who comes from MK. So he's with people like Spue Nyanda and others who are saying, we made a mistake by bringing Jacob Zuma in. But I think we have to watch
clearly,
that.
Clearly, Didi Mabuza is one of the arch henchmen in this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it would appear that the most vocal and obvious and imminent threats come from him.
When it comes to who wins in December in the ANC contest, Didi Mabuza is one of those people who clearly have said Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is will be the president, and he's positioning himself as a possible deputy president.
Well, hasn't Mpumalanga got the highest ANC turnout in terms of the last election?
Mpumalanga has become a stronghold of the ANC. Yeah. It's got, I think it's the third biggest now after KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape.
But in terms of percentage of vote, they were in the 70s.
Yes. Mpumalanga is still very much reflects an ANC of the 2000s in terms of support for the ANC. Remember in Mpumalanga you used to have the Kangwane homeland, you used to have the Kwandebele homeland,
right.
You used to have all those homelands, and those homelands were interesting because they were fully integrated into the apartheid machinery in many ways. And with a new administration, they like order there. They like
authoritarianism.
Yes, there's an odd thing that goes on there. And the ANC and someone like D.D. Mabuza has just tapped into that old network of civil servants and so forth. And it's worked for It's worked for the ANC, and it's worked for strong men like Didi Mabuza.
That's all we got time for today, Justice. Happy Africa Day.
Happy Africa Day to all of you. It's fantastic. I heard a beautiful thing the other day, and it's about young people. Did you know that 83% of Zimbabweans were not born when Robert Mugabe became president in 1980.
83% of Zimbabweans were not born.
Yes. I found it a bit odd, but I thought, what? Exactly.
Well, Gareth, remember the statistic that we just found out the other day, that the average age of the African is 14 years old, uh-huh. but the average uh-huh. age of the African leader is 70.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Happy Africa Day.
Rise up, youth. Rise up.
We need an Emmanuel Macron. It's time. Mabali Mulu, run for president, man. Come on. I mean,
I second
Justice, we can't.
The call has been made for you to run for president. Who so you think these, about
but,
that.
But who are these old men who keep us in their thrall when there are so many of us who are much we're young. Half their age exactly. and we still let them rule over us.
Exactly.
And we're stronger and more vital and more connected and more technologically savvy than they will ever be. We should take control back.
Exactly. I mean, I just found it astounding. It's shocking. He's 94.
Yeah.
How many Zimbabwe? He's 94. What's he doing? I mean, jeepers, he should be out there checking out the cows on his farm or something.
Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
The Burning Platform, powered by Nando's. Every week with Justice Malala, you get more than your share, more than your spoonful of sugar every week to talk about, think about, ruminate upon those things that are going on in South Africa and the world.
Can I just say, it was a fantastic week for Nando's. Did you see the former finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, roasting Lynn Brown in Parliament?
Like a peri-peri chicken.
Oh, it was hot. It was so hot. Ah, I loved it.
All right. Thank you, Justice. Absolutely. Brought to you by Nando's. That's the Burning Platform. If you missed any of it, all you need to do is go onto cliffcentral.com and listen to the whole thing. You can get any podcast of any part of the programming we put on at any time on demand by going onto our app or by going to cliffcentral.com on the web. You can find everything, Sia. Everything. And there's a search function which will allow you to look up just about anything. So if you've got to type in a name of a certain politician, or there's someone that you're interested in following up on, a celebrity, a sports star, anybody else, if we've interviewed them, you will find them.
It's your one-stop shop.
That's right. And if you want to go back and listen to Burning Platforms of a couple of weeks ago and see how things have changed, that's always a fun exercise to do too, because in the moment, there are very few people, aside from Justice, who are able to see what is to come and what has been and see it in context. That's the way I like the Burning Platform, as a moment in time where we can gather our thoughts and figure out what our next step is going to be. And it really is up to us. It's not just up to these politicians. You hear about all these machinations within the ANC, but that is just half the story. The other half of the story is you and me. Coming up, we've got an interview with Prof. Anderson. This is an interesting guy. I think he and I had a lot of arguments. We didn't just agree on most of the things that he had to say. It was all to do with leadership. It was all to do with how tertiary education is changing. And I thought it might be interesting for you to listen into that and listen to what Prof. Anderson had to say. That's coming up in the next hour. CliffCentral.com. Good morning. CliffCentral.com.